Hollywood, welcome to Starlight Mystery Theater and another episode in the series Matthew Slade, Private Investigator.
We invite you to take your seat as Matthew Slade, Private Investigator, unfolds part one of a three-part story, Day of the Phoenix.
In my job, the hours are odd. So are the circumstances and the people I meet. You could even call some of them dangerous. My calling card reads, Matthew Slade, Private Investigator. It was 2:40 a.m. I was at my apartment, the Warwick Arms, completing some paperwork on an extortion case. Hello? Yes, this is Matthew Slade. Oh, yes, Mrs. Marlowe. What? Of course. I'll come right over. It was Laura Marlowe, wife of a client, ex-client. He just stopped two bullets cold. I grabbed my coat and headed for the underground garage. It was a bad night, a worse one for a murder. I headed for the Marlowe home, 23 El Cerrito Place. Richard Marlowe had been more than a client. He'd been a close friend, a man of integrity. I couldn't imagine anyone wanting him dead. It was a shock. I got another one as I arrived. A body laid crumpled in the driveway. It was hard to recognize him. A bullet fired from close range had torn away his face. I carried him into the gatehouse, returned to the car, then continued up the drive to the house. One night, two murders. I hoped I wouldn't find a third. As I reached the house, I could see Laura Marlowe silhouetted in the doorway.
Slade.
Mrs. Marlowe, are you all right?
Yes. Thank heaven you're here.
I came as quickly as I could.
Please come in. He's over there, by the desk.
You feel up to telling me about it?
I was upstairs. I'd just gone to bed when I heard the shots. As I came down the stairs, I heard a car drive away. I came in here and I found him.
Have you called the police?
You're the only one I've called. Because you're a good friend of my husband, I felt I could count on you for help. I was frantic, don't you see? I had no one else to turn to.
Now, what about the servants?
Oh, this is the housekeeper's night off. I kept ringing for Morris, our chauffeur, and he didn't answer.
I found him lying by the front gate, dead. The best way I can help you, Mrs. Marlowe, is by calling the police. I called homicide. Within 30 minutes, the place was like a three-ring circus.
Hey, take another one from over here, Charles.
Okay.
Let's get this area talking and wrap it up, huh?
You tell a pretty convincing story, Slade. That all there is to it?
No more than I've already told you.
That's true, Lieutenant Slade. Mr. Slade did me a great service by coming here tonight.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. You touch anything, Mrs. Marlowe?
No.
No trace of a gun. You wouldn't be carrying one, would you, Slade?
Not today.
Keep one?
My office.
License?
Naturally.
What sort of gun is it?
38.
That's all for the moment, Slade. You're free to go.
I left, but not alone. As I passed through the gateway and out into the street, a black sedan pulled from the curb and followed. Lieutenant Flagg obviously intended to keep a close watch on my activities. As I entered into the Warwick Arms garage, the black sedan cruised by. From my apartment window, I could see it parked across the street. Some poor cop was going to spend a very uncomfortable night. I turned in, slept for what seemed like minutes, when the doorbell rang.
Okay, I'm coming. I knew it. Who else would come calling at this hour but the police? Don't you gentlemen ever sleep?
You gonna let us in?
No, I don't know. Did I break some law by sleeping till 7 o'clock?
Look, Slade, don't get funny.
All right, calm yourself, Lieutenant. Come on in. Now, take a seat. Now, what brings you so early?
Tough luck you've been at the Marlowe place before us. Makes you a suspect.
Oh, come on now. You can hardly expect me to believe you think that.
You got to start with someone. You look good to us. Check you out. Sergeant Tonelli here wrote it all down in this little notebook. Been around, Slade. Born Sydney, 1932. Moved to New Guinea in 49. Joined the Colonial Office 51. 57, Special Customs Agent, Marseille. Very impressive.
Oh, you haven't heard the half of it, Lieutenant. I have a scar on my left thumb, and when it rains, my leg hurts. So that's from the time a dog took a bite out of it. Now, look, let's dispense with this tour and get this over with.
You told us the Marlowe dame called and asked you to go over there.
Yeah, that's right. Richard Marlowe was a client of mine. His wife needed help. I gave it. Anything wrong with that?
Not that that's all there is to it. What was the nature of your business with him?
He collected things. That was his hobby. I tracked down several art pieces for him. In fact, we just recently returned from a buying trip to the Orient.
Mrs. Morrow?
My dealings were mainly with her husband. I've only met her a few times.
Is that so?
Now, look, I don't care much for your insinuation, Lieutenant.
You were at the scene of a murder last night, and your reason for being there don't satisfy me. Could be you and his wife were playing around. Makes a good motive. There were no signs an intruder had broken into that house. She reported nothing stolen. What clues we have lead me to believe Marlowe is expecting whoever knocked him off. Expecting a friend, maybe. You know a lot more than you're letting on, and I intend to find out what it is. Get dressed.
Oh, you're not serious.
You better do as he says, Matt.
All right. If you want to talk, let's talk.
We'll talk. Not here. I prefer to play the game in my own backyard. You got 5 minutes.
The lieutenant was a man used to getting his own way. I dressed and left with him. As we reached the street and entered the police car, I noticed the black sedan still parked.
In the front, Slade, between us.
You could have sent your watchdog home last night. I wasn't going anywhere.
What?
That watchdog you had tailing
me. We had no one tailing you. You've been seeing things.
I guessed wrong. And who was in that car? And what did he want? We arrived at headquarters in 15 minutes. An hour later, Lieutenant Flagg was still playing Quizmaster.
What were you doing at the Marlowe place?
You're a hard man to convince, Lieutenant. You've heard my story. You
couldn't fool an old lady. Now quit stalling and lay it on the line.
Would you like a statement?
A full statement, signed and sealed.
Without coercion?
We don't get them any other way.
Well, then I'll need my attorney.
You intend to stand on your right, stage a big scene?
If you think I killed Marlowe, book me. If you do, that gives me the right to bring my attorney down here. Now, I know as well as you do there isn't a charge in the book you can hold me on.
I didn't say I was going to book you. But if I do, I can arraign you on what I've already got.
What charge?
As a suspect. Suspicion of accessory after the fact, a felony, Section 32, in case you're interested.
As an accessory after the fact, you'd have to prove intent. And in this case, knowledge that a crime was committed. Now, just how do you intend to prove that?
Ways can be found. I could rig a dozen things. I could have you locked up as a material witness, for one thing.
Not in this state, except by a court order. You wouldn't dare try that.
I've got the lab report here. How's it going?
Still covering the same ground. Both parties shot from close range of the .45. Marlowe twice through the pump, Morris once in the face. Okay, Slade, you can go.
What? You mean you're giving up that easily?
I said you could go. I didn't say it was finished. You're not off the hook yet, not by a long shot. I'll give you a day or so to think things over. If you're not back here with the kind of story I think you're capable of telling, I'll be forced to go to the commissioner and tell him we have a suspect withholding information in a murder case. Is that clear?
Very clear.
Adios, gentlemen.
You don't really think he had anything to do with it, do you?
No. My guess is he has an idea who did. We got to come up with a motive. Maybe Slade can supply us with one.
You sure ride him?
Yeah. I intend to keep on riding him until I sort this thing out. We are going to see him sweat.
I felt like a man sinking in quicksand. Like it or not, I was now involved in a murder case. I took a cab to my office across town on Sutter Street. As I got out, the black sedan pulled ahead and parked. I made a mental note of the license number, entered the building, and took the elevator to my fourth floor office. Be a sweetheart and check on who owns a black sedan, license number OKW576, and I'm going into shave.
Not so fast. You have a visitor.
A client?
Laura Marlowe.
Mrs. Marlowe. Hold my call, Jonesy. How are you feeling, Mrs. Marlowe?
Better, thank you.
Now, please, sit down.
Thank you. I really don't know how to tell you this. There's more to last night's killing than you might imagine. Much more.
Yes?
The jade statuette you located for my husband when you were both in Hong Kong, it was stolen last night.
The Phoenix? I can't imagine anyone killing two people for an inexpensive art piece.
To the contrary, it has extreme value.
Well, that's hardly possible, Mrs. Marlowe. The statuette is merely a replica of a legendary bird, worth at the most $200. There must be 50 of them around.
Mr. Slade, shortly after you returned from the Orient, Richard discovered the statuette to be the original Tibetan jade phoenix.
To my knowledge, it's never been substantiated that an original Tibetan phoenix actually exists. Oh, why didn't you tell me this last night?
I needed time to think.
And?
I decided to ask you for your help, to investigate for me.
The disappearance of the jade or your husband's murder?
The jade. It may seem a mercenary request at this time, but a necessary one. For some time, I've been wanting a divorce, but Richard always refused. And then last week, his attorney came to the house with a settlement waiver. He said a divorce would be agreed to if I signed it. Foolishly, I suppose, I did. You see, I'm in need of money, Mr. Slade. If I have the jade, I can sell it. I'm willing to pay you well for its recovery.
Who else knows what you've just told me?
Well, I was coming to that. About a month ago, an antique dealer came to the house to show some art pieces.
Do you know his name?
Edward De Silva.
I've heard of him. He's involved in more than antiques.
Well, somehow he found out about the phoenix and wanted to buy it. Richard told him it wasn't for sale. De Silva was determined. He kept pestering him to sell. They had a violent argument over it, and then there were threats.
What kind of threats?
Blackmail. De Silva said he knew of a stock manipulation that Richard was involved in some years ago.
Anything to it?
Oh, not that I know of.
Excuse me a moment. Jonesy, see if you can get me both the business and residence address of Edward De Silva. He's an antique dealer.
Will you help me, Mr. Slade?
Let me give it some thought. I'll call you at home later in the day.
Oh, I don't know that I can go back there. Not after what's happened.
Well, if it would be of help, I could have my secretary assist you in moving into an apartment.
Thank you.
I'll have Miss Jones make the arrangements. Excuse me.
What do you have for me, Jonesy?
See. The car is registered to Pacific Rent-A-Car. Dallas Hawks leased it yesterday. Gave his address as the Lux Hotel. That took some getting.
That's my girl.
Your Edward De Silva lives at 17 Ronda Vista Lane. His antique shop's at 2500 St. Cloud, but you won't find him there this afternoon. He's at the Beverly Athletic Club.
Well, here's another job for you. I'd like you to arrange for Mrs. Marlowe to move into an apartment. Help her get some things together and then see if she gets settled.
Mm-hmm.
I'd suggest the Fremont Terrace.
All right.
Now, Mrs. Marlowe, Miss Jones will take care of everything.
I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Slade.
Not at all. I'll be in touch. I went to the window of my inner office and looked down at the street. The black sedan was still parked. I made up my mind to go down and face the driver when...
Mr. Slade, forgive me if I startled you. My card.
He handed me a lavender calling card, which read, Aaron Ballestero, Curator, Damascus Museum, Damascus, Syria. He was a peculiar-looking bird, tall, dark, with a goatee. He wore what looked like a morning coat with a carnation in the lapel. A pearl-gray Homburg hat set at a rakish angle on his head. He wore white gloves and carried a black ivory cane. My nostrils caught the odor of what seemed like shalimar. I offered him a chair.
I'm seeking a statuette, a certain jade figure in the form of a mythical bird.
A Tibetan phoenix?
Precisely. It was stolen following the death of its owner 2 years ago in Damascus. He had willed it to the museum. Recently, we learned the phoenix had turned up in the Orient. A Shanghai merchant had used it as a form of payment to a gentleman in Hong Kong for a passage across the Red Border. A man by the name of...
Lyle Milford Jackman?
Yes. I searched out Mr. Jackman, prepared to pay, on behalf of the museum, a reasonable sum for the return of the phoenix. Evidently, Mr. Jackman suspected it might be worth more than was being offered. Told me he had sold it to a dealer in London. I spent 2 weeks there. False lead. I returned to Hong Kong. But Mr. Jackman had gone.
What led you here?
I learned that he had left for San Francisco on Japanese freighter. Also that some months earlier, you had purchased the phoenix from him for an American collector.
Then you feel this is the original jade phoenix described in Tibetan legend?
That's correct, Mr. Slade.
What makes you so sure?
The museum has conducted extensive research into its history. Perhaps you'd be interested in its findings.
Very interested.
In 600 A.D., as legend tells it, a caravan of Buddhist priests traveled from Karakoram, traversing the Himalayas into Tibet. King Namri Songsen had offered them a fertile valley in which to build a temple. To show their gratitude, they brought the king gifts of great wealth, among them an exquisite jade statuette, carved into the shape of the phoenix, the king of birds. Oriental rubies were set into the eyes. The jade was stolen by a Nepal warlord and taken into India. Little was heard of it until 1295, when Marco Polo... brought it into Venice. News of the jade appeared in Spain in 1542 and again in 1868 in Corsica, but was never positively identified.
What happened to it after Corsica?
Well, there were no reports of the phoenix from 1868 until 2 years ago in Damascus. Unfortunately, it was mislaid before the museum could authenticate it.
You say rubies were encrusted in the eyes?
Yes. They were said to have been covered with a thick green coating, done, obviously, to conceal their immense value. As I mentioned, it is our belief the one I am now searching for is the original. Hence my visit here to negotiate a purchase with your client.
I wish that were possible. My client was murdered last night.
Huh?
The phoenix stolen.
Oh, this is very distressing news indeed. Could I persuade you to assist me in its recovery? The museum has authorized me to offer $10,000 to that end.
Let me think about it. Where can I contact you?
I'm lodged at the San Moritz Hotel. I'll be looking forward to our next meeting. I feel assured in trusting you with the job at hand.
He left as silently as he had come. He seemed to glide through the door. To say I was slightly intrigued would be putting it mildly. This case was taking on strange proportions. Four people seeking a jade statuette. Laura Marlowe, Edward De Silva, Aaron Ballestero, and now Lyle Jackman on his way here from Hong Kong. Or had he already arrived? I thought of Dallas Hawks in the black sedan. Had Jackman sent him? Or was he to be number five? I looked out the window. I could see him clearly now as he leaned against the fender. He was dark, slight of build, looked Indian. He was dressed like a carnival barker in his white suit, black shirt, and straw hat. And it was time to force his hand. I left the office and headed for the street. I made sure he saw me as I crossed the intersection of Powell and Sutter. I actually had to stop several times and window shop to keep him from losing me. Fine shadow. I turned down Bush Street and into an alley. I pressed myself into a small alcove and waited. Hawk stopped at the mouth of the alley, then cautiously started down. As he approached my position, I stepped out and confronted him. He moved for his gun. I grabbed his arm and pushed him back against the wall. I brought my knee up into his stomach. He doubled up long enough for me to disarm him. He sagged limply against the wall. The fight was gone out of him. Now, as a shadow, you're about as inconspicuous as a carnival barker. Now, what do you want?
The guy gave me 50 to tell you. That's all I know.
What guy?
I don't know. Just a guy.
If this guy's name happens to be Lyle Jackman, you go back and tell him I don't like being followed by the likes of you. And if he wants to see me, my office hours are 9 to 5. Now go back and tell him that, mister. My next move was the call on Edward De Silva at the Beverly Athletic Club. It was a fashionable health spa on the West End for overweight and overwealthy businessmen. The attendant led me to an outside garden patio. He pointed to a bronzed figure poised on the high board of the swimming pool. I watched him execute a pretty fair jackknife. He cut into the water like a missile and came up at mid-pool, shaking the water from his head. De Silva?
Who wants him, friend?
I do. He paid little attention to me, went right on swimming. I thought I'd try something a little stronger. A mutual friend was murdered last night, Eddie. The one you were blackmailing? Well, that reached home. He swallowed a mouthful of water, swam to the steps, and quickly got out. He donned a fancy beach robe.
A man could see a lot of trouble with that kind of talk. Who are you?
I handed him my card. He tugged at the crisp linen handkerchief protruding from the initial breast pocket of the robe, then ran a finger over his hairline mustache.
Matthew St. Investigator, huh? Ask you. You know, I think I've heard your name someplace. Why don't you join me for lunch? We can find out what's on your mind.
A few minutes later, we were munching on a concoction of carrot, celery, lettuce, and seaweed. He seemed to enjoy it. I felt like Peter Cottontail. They feed this to rabbits, don't they, Eddie?
Well, that's a good way to stay young, friend.
Now, you might have something there, come to think of it. I've never seen an old rabbit.
You got a funny sense of humor, friend.
Yeah, about some things, Eddie, but not about your connection with Richard Marlowe.
What connection might that be?
A certain art piece you wanted, a jade phoenix.
Oh, yeah, well, it's no secret. I wanted the phoenix. I offered him a good price, and we were close to a deal, and all this happened.
Well, that's not quite the way I heard it.
You listen to the wrong people, Frank.
You wanted the Phoenix. You threatened Marlowe with blackmail. You go that far, maybe you'd even murder for it.
What's that supposed to mean?
Exactly what I said. Two people were killed for the Phoenix last night, Eddie.
You can't pin that on me.
No, I could make a good try.
Well, now, why would I want to go to that much trouble for an old piece of jade?
Because that old piece of jade is worth money.
That's not enough for me to kill somebody.
Mrs. Marlowe thinks you did.
If she said that, she's a dirty liar. Now, look, she wanted me to force the old boy into giving her a divorce. So she told me of a crooked stock deal he pulled once. Wanted me to hold it over him. See, even though he hated her guts, he wouldn't let her go. Well, he got some kind of kick holding out on her. He'd cut her off without any spending money. Now, like I said, she wanted me to blackmail him so she could get a divorce and then a settlement. Deal was we'd split whatever she got. I wanted no part of it.
Where were you last night?
I was at home. I was in all night.
Well, you don't sound too sure.
Where do you get off asking me all these questions?
When the police find out the Phoenix is the murder motive, you're going to have to do a lot of explaining.
Maybe, but not to you.
Eddie was visibly shaken. I'd done a good job of unnerving him. I thought it curious that he didn't seem at all surprised to hear the Phoenix had been stolen. As of now, only four people knew that. Laura, Ballestero, myself, and the killer. I put De Silva in a bad light. I decided this would be as good a time as any to give his home a quick going over. 17 Ronda Vista Lane, a Spanish-style home set well back from the road. I rapped on the door to make sure no one was there, then went around back and slipped the catch on the patio door. Inside, the place looked like a museum. An oversized antique desk was set into one corner of the room. I searched it, came across a leather-bound book. There were dozens of names, girls' names, and other pertinent information. This was not just a bachelor's little black book. De Silva was operating a call girl racket. I heard a car pulled into the driveway. I hurriedly returned the book, looked out from behind the drapes. It was De Silva, and he was heading for the front door, and fast. I looked for a place to hide, darted behind the Soji folding screen as he came in. He moved straight to the desk. I could see partially through the crack in the screen. He lifted the desk blotter, removed a small envelope, checked its contents, then slipped the envelope into his coat pocket. He started for the door, but stopped short as the phone rang. He hesitated for a moment, and then left. The phone continued to ring. I moved to the window and watched as De Silva drove off and then picked up the receiver.
Eddie? Hello? Hello, Eddie?
There was no mistaking that voice. Laura Marlowe. Why was she phoning Eddie? Suddenly, I felt a sharp sting on the back of my neck. Fuzziness, smoke swirls, and then black. My next conscious recollection was the distant sound of foghorns and the gentle heaving of the floor under my body. My head throbbed with the beat of a giant kettle drum. I tried to move. My arms were pinned against my sides. My vision was foggy. As it cleared, I could see the huge frame of a man hovering over me. He wore a white suit and a large plantation hat. It was Lyle Milford Jackman.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.